This is Vrindavan Mahimamrita, and we want to enter deeply into Vrindavan, and we're discussing this particular section about the comparative position of Vrindavan Vaikuntha and the queens of Dwarka and the gopis.
So we heard, that's really kind of long. We heard how Lakshmi Devi, she can't relish Vrindavan's conjugal mellows, but even the dasis of Radha, they can relish the Madhurya Ras, as everyone knows. And Brahma and Shiva, different demigods, they can't give what Vrindavan can give. And then Lakshmi and Narayana are bewildered by Krishna's beauty in Vrindavan, because we're showing a comparable position. This is 11th Sataka, verse 33. Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead. It's a long shloka. My pen is there? Yeah. Actually, maybe I think we did this one already. 33. Yeah, we did that. Then we're on. Ryan faints when he sees the ray of one toenail, Radharani. And Ryan sees it, he faints. That's from 1183.
Yeah,
I have it. Maybe some other class. Yeah, that's why I'm writing. You know, marking them. Because sometimes they're overlapping. Radha Krishna Niravari Mitto Vardam Anan Varman Anarago Itram Matam Stiracharam Aho Tadhayam Prima Madhura Agantu Napyati Rasa Chid Akarayet Yat Swayam Cha Nityam Tasangati Rasa Bharam Nomi Vrindavanam Tat. Translation. In Vrindavan, Radha Krishna eternally develop intense attachment for each other. All animate and inanimate living entities become intoxicated with nectarian love for the divine couple. Even a stranger achieves spiritual bliss. Therefore, I offer my obeisances to Sri Vrindavan, which is an eternal companion. Radha Krishna. It's very nice, but it's the wrong chapter. So, please forgive me. I just finished Prasad about a minute ago. I seem to clearly. 1183. Okay, let's try again. To err as human. Okay. Let's see if this one rings true to our outline. Gora Shamalam Etat Adutatamam Divyam Kishora Dvayam Sri Vrinda Pine Mahasmara Rasam Matam Sada Kridati Rupe Nata Vaya Sriya Madura Vaidagdhyatma Tulyam Pare Shashvapyahita Murcham Angri Nakara Chaya Managish Drishtida. The most wonderful, fair and dark complexioned divine young couple become intoxicated with remembrance of each other while eternally enjoying transcendental pastimes in Vrindavan. They are so unique that simply by Radha Krishna's extraordinary beauty, sweet youthfulness, nectarian amorous pastimes, and the shade of their lotus feet, they bewilder even the mind of the Supreme Lord Narayan. So in so many ways they bewildered Narayan. Such extraordinary beauty. We see what to speak of Vrindavan, but in Dwarka Lila, Lord Narayan, he actually kidnapped the sons of a Brahmin, because he wanted to actually arrange a situation where Krishna would have to come to Vishnu Loka to give darshan, because he was so overwhelmed with the sweetness of Krishna, and he somehow didn't want to come to Dwarka, or didn't have the adhikar to go there. It's hard to say. But in that pastime, it's in 10th canto of Bhagavatam, the Brahmin had given birth to one son after another, and they were all captured, because Mahavishnu actually took them, Narayan Mahavishnu. Then Arjuna and Krishna went on Krishna's chariot to Vaikuntha Loka, and in that purport, the Vishnu Chakravarti explains that Krishna is so sweet and so attractive that even, what to speak of Lakshmi Devi, even Vishnu, Lakshmi left Narayan to come to do Vail, to austerities in Vailma, and someone has to keep the house running. So Lakshmi went away and Narayan is left. So then he said, he was thinking, I want to all see Krishna, I want to have darshan of Krishna. So then he arranged to steal the sons of the Brahmin. And then Krishna went there. And this shows that Krishna is more attractive than Vishnu. Because he is Swayam Bhagavan, Purnatara Bhagavan, Rasa Shekara Krishna, Rasaracha Krishna. So this verse is telling that, as I mentioned, even the toenails or any aspect of running Krishna completely bewilder the mind of Lord Narayan. He faints to see one toenail ray of Radha and Krishna. What would happen if we were to see? We can see another translation in chapter 11. This is verse 83. Intoxicated by the sweet nectar of transcendental passion and displaying unique handsomeness, youthfulness, opulence, sweet charm, and expert intelligence, the very wonderful, fair, and dark, youthful, divine couple enjoys pastimes in the forests of Vrindavan. A glimpse of the shade of their toenails makes Lord Narayan faint in ecstasy. See the Sanskrit, a glimpse of the toenails. Angri nakam chaya manag drishtita. It says, ahita murcham. Angri, the lotus feet, the nakara, the nails on the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna. The chaya, the shadow. He simply sees them and it becomes murcham, it becomes faint. Brahma just faints. Of course, this is a glorification of the beauty and prabhava of Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan, and how they're so much attracted, even Lord Narayan becomes attracted to the extraordinary beauty and sweet youthfulness. The beauty and love of Krishna is so attractive, it attracts even Lord Narayan. Which means Krishna is so beautiful, he attracts himself. There's a pastime of that in Dwarka. Krishna was there in the palace, and inside the palace there was a nice small pool there with some fish or some fountain to cool off the palace. And Krishna one day was sitting there looking at the lotus flowers, leaning on the edge of the reflective pool in the bedroom of his palace in Dwarka. He leaned over and he saw a reflection in the water. It was his own face. And Krishna said, oh, who is this most handsome person? So attractive. It almost sounds like karmis, they have a phrase, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all? Someone looks in the mirror and thinks, oh, they may foolishly think that I'm so handsome, I'm so beautiful. Whatever. Yeah. So Krishna looked and he saw his reflection. And even Krishna was attracted to his own reflection. Krishna's beauty even attracts Krishna. Like it says that when Rupa Goswami says, when Krishna wears ornaments, usually when people wear ornaments, if a lady is nicely appointed and decorated with various rings and necklaces and jewelry, then one considers, oh, she looks so beautiful with the enhancement of ornamentation, gold and jewelry. body enhances and increases her beauty. But Rupa Goswami says the opposite is there. Krishna's beauty is such that he makes the ornaments, when ornaments are put on Krishna's body, there's a phrase for that, Sanskrit phrase. He's the bhushanam of all bhushanams, or something, navabhushanam. That his body is so beautiful and effulgent that it actually makes the ornaments look attractive. It increases the attraction and beauty of the necklaces when they're on Krishna's body. Krishna lends his attraction and beauty to the ornaments and necklaces. So there's so many nice verses like this about Krishna's beauty and how much it affects everyone in the universe. Lakshmi, Narayan, the living entities, the rivers, the rocks, the birds, what to speak of the gopis. They become attracted, they become stunned. This is Vrindavan, Sri Krishna. Extraordinary form of the Lord, complete with all beauty and unlimited love. And there's many verses in chapter 12 of how Lakshmi and Narayan are enchanted by Radha and Krishna. Now we can look at those verses. 12:40 through 41. We have to think, why is Prabhupada Saraswati telling us so much about these points? Because it's the Mahimamrita, it's the glories of Vrindavan, which means the glories of the associates of the Lord, the glories of Radha and Krishna and their servants, the glories of the Dham, the legalist devotees, the relationships of the devotees of the Lord. But these, he wants us to clearly understand, because in Vaidhi Bhakti, if someone is following Vaidhi Bhakti, and only Vaidhi Bhakti, he will come to Vaikuntha. He can attain Bhava and Prem. But unless he's under the guidance of an eternal resident of Vrindavan, and trying to model his or mold his life internally and externally after their example, and be begging and crying and praying for their mercy, then one cannot enter into the Braja Leela of Radha and Krishna. So those that are following Vaidhi Sadhana with the idea of like Kunta praying, generally they have the idea they're attracted to some, they may have Dasi Rati as their Stai Rati or Sakya Rati, but they're attracted to the opulent, majestic aspect of God as Vishnu. So they worship with an idea for some type of mukti, Sarupya Mukti, have the same form as Vishnu, so Lokya Mukti, live on the same planet. But the aspirants for Krishna and Vrindavan, they don't want Mukti, they want Seva. They want Braj, Prem Seva, Radha Krishna and Braj, that's all. They don't want any, whatever form it takes, whatever form I'm meant to have, and I become attracted to in the course of my bhajan. And that form will be a form to express seva, to give pleasure to Radha Krishna by the various loving sentiments, loving expressions and arrangements and all kinds of particular personal services favorably rendered. So he wants to remind us that, oh, if you are in Vaidhi Sadhana, you're going to Vaikuntha, or you're going to Lakshmi Narayan, but look at, even Narayan is going to Vrindavan. Even the Ryan wants to see Radha and Krishna. So then one may hear that, because the whole idea is that when one reads Shastra and he's practicing Bhakti Bhajan, eventually he reads so many pastimes of the Lord, especially in Vrindavan, for example, then he awakens a desire will come in his heart to serve the Lord in a particular mood. This is how the Acharyas explain it, that there's a mood of seva in the heart of the jiva, but it's never been fully developed or expressed. That's the whole idea of cultivation. So when one reads, he reads, and finally something clicks inside of him, some attraction, some rag, some attachment. And one becomes, as one reads more about Krishna and Vrindavan in a general way, then he becomes attracted to, say, Krishna and Vrindavan and those rasas, with the coward boys and the gopis.
And then as he reads more specifically about, say, Krishna Vrindavan or the Vrijavasis, then he starts to read about the services of the different devotees of the Lord, like Radharani or the Gopis or the Suvas Sridham. And then he starts to focus on one of those residents. This is Rupa Goswami's guidance in Raghavan. So ultimately we develop prema for three. We're reading that this today. Prema is there for the Radharani, and Madhurya Ras for Radharani and Krishna, and for one of the Sakis, Asa Sakis. As Prabhupada said, we should follow Surab Damodar and Ramananda Roy and Rupan Raghunath. So we follow Lita, Vishaka in a general way, and their particular moves and bhavas. So let's see these verses, chapter 12, verse 40, 41. This is text 40, chapter, Shataka 12. Brindaranye iti chitram prakatayati nijam rupam ashcharya vesho. Radha Krishna yadali tativir atirasa murasa ranga pravishto. Sarve nirvedam apurvedi pramukha suras tutkrita brahma bhavash. Chintam detam munindra vibhur api ramaya ramaya vivalas tar yalun tat. When wonderfully dressed Radha and Krishna enter the beautiful Ras Lila arena, which is nicely decorated by the gopis, and when Sri Vrindavan manifests its own form, wonderful form, then the demigods headed by Brahma reject the happiness of liberation and welcome eternal peace. The best of the sages give up meditation and welcome renunciation. And Sri Lakshmi and Ryan become overwhelmed with ecstatic love and roll on the ground. Now that's quite an effect of Radha and Krishna's love. They're entering the Rasa dance and Lakshmi and Ryan, sages, and whatever anyone's doing, they give it up and become enamored and attracted. So the Ras Lila is so attractive, even to the perfection of Godhead and majesty and vidhi and rules and regulations, Lord Narayan. He's a god of law, law and order, Narayan. And then Lakshmi Devi. But they, when Ras Lila, Krishna's dancing with the wives of other men, under the full moonlight, seemingly an immoral display by mundane standards of Nara, and the Yama of human beings. But then Lakshmi and Ryan are rolling on the ground to see or to even understand, overwhelmed with ecstatic love and roll on the ground. They just see them entering the Rasa Lila arena. In other places, it says when Krishna and Radha are engaged in Rasa Lila, the demigods and their consorts are flying above Vrindavan in their flower airplanes. And the men that are with them, they can't see the gopis. The ladies see the gopis and Krishna, their wives, Swargadevi. And they feel intense attraction for Krishna, conjugal mood. And they have different transformations that happen. Then the men, they're just seeing Krishna and hearing the music, their husbands. And they find themselves like feeling like, what do you call it, prakriti abhiman. They're men and they have this purusha abhiman. But by hearing the music, the jingle, the ankle bells, seeing Krishna and understanding that this is a rasa dance, then they became so much attracted to Krishna, they felt like gopis. And they were thinking, what's happening to us? As Vishnu describes, what's happening to us, we're feeling like women, and we want to embrace Krishna to our chest, and our wives are obviously disturbed like that. And then, but that's all right, they're women, and they're devis, so Swarga devis, so they naturally love beautiful men and music. But what's happening to us? What is this? What's going on? So it's quite an unusual transformation, even the males, because ultimately the souls are all prakriti,
all feminine in relation to Krishna. They're all his servants. Shakti, Tatastha Shakti, Ladini Shakti, Antaranga Shakti. So they felt like this. So read another translation. So just freeze that in your window, computer window. Lakshmi Narayan rolling on the ground of Vrindavan outside the Ras Lila. It's a little hard. I mean, I don't know how the worshippers, the Sri Vaishnavas, might not appreciate that. If we were to read this verse from the Vrindavan Mahimamrita by Prabhupada Saraswati, who is reputed worshipper Sri Rangaji, accordingly, some idea of that is there in his biography. And yes, you're Sri Vaishnava, you worship Lakshmi Narayana, Sri Sampradaya. So you know you're Lakshmi Narayana, they're rolling on the ground in Vrindavan. Just to see Krishna after the Rasa dance, I don't know that they would so much accept that. Possibly they would object to that. But never mind, that's all right. A great wonder appeared in the forest of Vrindavan. This is Rupam, Nicham Rupam Ashcharya Vesho. Prakat, Brindaranya Prakat. An amazing wonder. Revealing their handsome transcendental forms, Radha and Krishna have entered the arena of the Rasa dance with their gopi friends. Now everyone has become detached from materialism. Now the demigods headed by Brahma revile impersonal liberation. Great sages have broken their meditation. And Lord Narayan and Lakshmi Devi are rolling about on the ground, overcome with ecstasy. There you have it. Both translators depict Lakshmi Narayan as rolling around the ground of Vrindavan and in transcendental ecstasy to see Radha and Krishna and Rasa dance. And Narottam Das Thakur Mahashaya's Prarthana. He has many prayers glorifying Vrindavan. He says, when will I see the arena of the Rasa dance with my eyes anointed with love? And when will I roll about there in the dust of that place, decorating my body and ornamenting my body with the dust of the feet of Radha and Krishna and the Rasa Stali and Vamshivada? So they, even the, our own acharyas are so much appreciating the Rasa Stali and Rasa Lila. We mentioned about Rasa Nyatra coming up, and I said, I have this idea that we can, because they had told me initially, they said, you can take us wherever you want us, want to take us. Some group of Russian devotees said, you can, 200 or so, 250 in March, you can take us wherever you want to take us. So I was thinking, well, I said, you told me that a few months ago, so I thought about that. And I thought, I want to take you to all the places of Radha and Krishna's pastimes, especially. And then as soon as I said this, yes, yes, very good, this is a very good idea. This is very good, yeah. So I was appreciating that somehow his super soul and my super soul were in tune. So for example, if you go to Vrindavan and you want to go to key places that are recognized in the ancient Shastras as actual places around Krishna's pastimes, in Padma Prana, Harivansha Prana, and others, then you'll naturally go to Imlitala and Shringharvat and Keshigat and Vamshivat and Govindastali and Brahmakund. These are the key places. So I told him my itinerary for Vrindavan. He said, yes, yes, very good. Very good. So it's because ultimately, as one advances in devotional bhajan, everything becomes concentrated and focused as his raga arises, as his attachment for Radha and Krishna arises, and worshipping them in a particular mood, and in a way and manner of particular associates of the Lord, the gopis, for example, worshipping Radha and Krishna, Amadurya Rati, then everything about his life will become very focused and concentrated on that desired perfectional state of love, sthayi bhava, and those type of services that one wants So he'll live in a particular place, he'll visit particular places, he'll sing particular bhajans, he'll worship a particular form of the Lord, he'll associate with particular devotees, he'll read particular shastras, and remember particular pastimes of God and Krishna. So therefore, even when one goes on yatra, he can go on yatra in a generic way, a Vaidhi way or a Ravanuga way, you can say. A Vaidhi sadhaka will go on yatra for purification, attraction, attachment to the holy Dhamma, and revelation and experience of the Lord and his many features and rasas in the holy Dhamma displayed. But as one advances and awakens his interest and attraction in a particular way of loving the Lord, then his taste will naturally evolve to a more specific form. I remember every year when I was in Vrindavan taking out parikramas, then Dina Bando used to say, I'll take all the devotees of Varsana and Nandagram. You take the devotees to Gokul. Because he was in charge, and I was he's a senior person there. And he said, so you take the devotees. I said, why can't I? I'd like to also go to Varsana. No, you go to Gokul and Ramandagat and all these places, and you can go to Vrindavan. I'll go to Nandagram, Tirupadava, Varsana. I said, okay, it's all transcendental. So many years, 10, 15 years, I was always taking all the devotees like this. So it's all Krishna's Leela, and it's ultimately from Krishna's very birth and Gokul, and Nanda Yashoda, and Radharani's appearance in Rabal, their Madhurya Rati was started from day one. That Purvarag, Radharani had Purvarag as soon as she was born, she had Purvarag for Krishna. She didn't have to awaken it. It was already fully blossomed within her heart. So much so, she had so much attachment to Purvarag for Krishna that she didn't even want to see anyone in this world till she saw the object of her attachment. The one and only object of her rag is none other than Shamsundar, Nanda Nanda, Yashoda Duval. So the very time she opened her eyes, because usually what we look at, we get attached to. Eyes are a big source of attachment. You've heard of Bilvamangala Thakur? Bilvamangala Thakur was realizing the danger of eyes. Out of sight, out of mind. That's the principle. So his eyes were taking him in the wrong direction, although his body was going to Vrindavan on the advice of his Shiksha Guru, or Vardman Pradarsha Guru. His body was going to Vrindavan, but his eyes were taking him to Maya. So then he said, wait a minute, my mind and eyes are going to Maya, but my body is walking to Vrindavan. So then he took some hairpins from some Brahmani lady and removed the eyes that were keeping him from finding his way to Vrindavan. So Bilvamangala's eyes were keeping him from finding his way to Vrindavan. Although generally eyes are used to help us find our way in our journey. We see where we're going with our eyes. Keep our eyes on the goal, eyes on the path. But in this case, his eyes were problematic. So when he took away those material eyes, then he could see the way to Vrindavan. He could see the path. And rather, in fact, Krishna came and showed him the way. As soon as he gave up his attachment to enjoy his eyes and the objects of this world, rupam, then Krishna became the rupam of his heart. Krishna, when he gave up all interest in material rupam, then Krishna's rupam manifested. Very interesting. Prabhupada came, and then he held him by the hand and said, come on. Actually, he had a stick. Prabhupada had a stick, and he held the stick on one end, and the other end he told Gopal, Bilvamangala to hold on to it. You ever see? Sometimes blind people, someone's leading them, they're holding on to a stick. So Gopal was like that, and Bilvamangala was holding. And while Bilvamangala was walking, although he didn't have eyes, he could not see where he was going. But he was so excited because he started thinking under the illusion of Yogamaya that I read Vrindavan is very fragrant. There's so much beautiful flowers there, Vrindavan flowers. And I read about that and I heard about that. So as he was walking, Bill Mungo was smelling this incredible fragrance. We must be getting near Vrindavan. We must be getting near Vrindavan. I'm sure this boy that's taking me is taking me to Vrindavan. But he didn't realize that the fragrance was coming from Krishna's body. That this boy that was leading the blind Bill Mungo was actually that boy from Vrindavan, who gives fragrance to Vrindavan. When Krishna lies on the ground to rest with the cowherd boys, then the fragrance of his body goes into the ground. And that's how, that's what makes the flowers smell so sweet. That's the gandha, the sugandha. It's just like what is the best thing that you can offer from the earth? It's fragrance. And what is the best fragrance of the earth? Chandan. Like Krishna's body. So when we do puja, we offer him fragrances. Esha gandha, kling Krishna nama. We offer him fragrances. Idam pushpam. We offer him fragrant flowers. Idam pushpam. Esha gandha, itar. Fragrant oils which are produced from the flowers of the earth. But he himself is, it's like offering a ghee lap to the sun. Oh, here's sun, here's a ghee lap. And puja, Surya puja. You're offering a tiny flame to the whole flame. But Krishna's form is unlimitedly fragrant. Saurabh, Saurabh Ganda, Kasturi, Chandan, Camphor, Lotus flower. Ladies in heavenly planets, the Swarga Devis, it says their bodies smell like flowers. Something different than here, of course. But their bodies smell like flowers. Now, what to speak of Krishna's fragrance? Not only that, even different parts of his body have different fragrances. His navel smells like chandan. His armpits smell like kasturi. His back smells like a lotus. So let's read another verse, verse 41 in the same chapter. Srimad Vrindavane, did I read? I read this translation here already also. Srimad Vrindavane Svin Nija Rasa Vibhaver Vyakti Mayati Loke Lokesha Shatru Mukya Yahya Bhuvi Bhuvau Ye Tale Ita Swayambhu Sarve Krishna Raga Pramatita Ridaya Drashtam Anyan Shekur Vismrityadisha Bhavam Sabhuvi Sabhagavan Krishna Bhagna Shriyabhut Shriyabhut. When this most delightful Vrindavan appears in this world with all its opulences, then Lord Brahma, the maintainer of the planets, then Lord Brahma and the maintainers of the planets like Indra, as well as all those who live on this earth planet or planets below the earth, become filled with attachment for Krishna. And the beauty of Sri Vrindavan captures their vision. What to speak of this? Even Narayan, the Lord of Vaikuntha, forgets that he is the Supreme Lord and becomes absorbed with Lakshmi and ecstatic love for Krishna. So he forgets. That's the translation showing, just see Krishna and Vrindavan, the delightful Krishna. How he manifests in Vrindavan, that everyone on earth and below the earth, they all become filled with attachment. The beauty of Sri Vrindavan captures their vision. This, of course, is emphasizing Narayan, Lakshmi, what is their relationship to Krishna, and how they're enamored by Krishna's beauty. In the translation of this verse 41, 12. Says, now the opulence of the sweetest nectar is manifested in Vrindavan in this world. Now the kings of all the planets headed by Indra have come to the surface of the earth. Now pure love for Lord Krishna agitates everyone's heart.
No one has the power to see anything else. Now Lord Narayan, remaining in his own abode, has forgotten that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And now Goddess Lakshmi is plunged into love for Lord Krishna. Krishna Magna, Shri Abhut. Sabhuvi Sabhagavan Krishna Magnam Shri Abhut. So his wife is totally, he's forgotten that he's God, and his wife is plunged into emotion of love for Krishna just by seeing Krishna in Vrindavan. And then chapter, there's verse 50 also in this chapter. Vrindaranya samastartam varshanam ramaharshanam shri shiyorapi bhajata tyaktva tuchartha tarshanam tuchartha insignificant. They reject all insignificant goals. In Vrindavan, which showers all necessities, even Lakshmi and Narayan's bodily hairs stand on end. Therefore, you should give up your insignificant desires and worship Sri Vrindavan. Of course, that's all bottom line here. Is that whatever you're interested in, if you're interested in Vaikuntha Prapti or Swarga or earthly sovereignty or enjoyment or anything, well, look at everything you're aspiring for, everything you're interested in or thought was grand materially or spiritually. Is actually all of that and everywhere and all planes that are worshipping Radha and Krishna and Vrindavan. Can't you see that this is the topmost thing? This is the topmost reality? So he's trying to, in so many different ways, establish the supremacy of Vrindavan. And this translation says, abandon all petty thirst, tarshanam. And worship Vrindavan, which showers the fulfillment of all desires and even makes Lakshmi Narayan's bodily hair stand erect with ecstasy. So obviously, Lakshmi Narayan are not in Vrindavan. Lakshmi's doing austerity. But now they're somehow contacting Vrindavan from their vantage point of Vaikuntha. And just hearing about it, someone's Narada Muni may be there narrating to them. Narada Muni may be narrating the glories of Vrindavan, which he's heard from Sadashiva, or from Vrindadevi, or his own experience when he became Naradi Gopi. Narada became Naradi Gopi, and bathing in Kusum Sarovara. So he has some access and understanding of Krishna's Leela, so he's a Vaikunthavasi, a Narayan Bhakta, Narayana, Narayana, Narayana. So when he goes there, maybe they heard about the Vrindavan Leela and the beauty and sweetness of Krishna's love in Vrindavan. Lakshmi Narayan heard from him. As soon as they heard, then it became Udipan. They became excited and their hearts started trembling. And then the hairs of their bodies stood on end, Satvik Vikara, transformation of Sattva. So then he's saying the conclusion of this is that you should just worship Vrindavan. And here, this one is saying that abandon all petty thirst, tyaktva tuchavat, tucha artha. Those objectives or values that we hold so near and dear, and we have taste for those things, artha tarshanam. The taste that we have for so many mundane objects, material objects, it should all be tyaktva, tucha. Should we reject it as totally insignificant? Tyaktva satan. There's that verse about tuchavat, about the man and woman. Tuchavat, insignificant. Although man and woman are so much attracted to each other, the Bhagavatam says this attraction is insignificant, tuchavat. Then might in that degree maybe becoming sukham, tuchavat. He says this arrangement is actually, it seems so significant and so primary. But when one rejects it and transcends it, then he realizes how insignificant it is and how meaningless it ultimately is. And binding ultimately is the most binding element of this world, man and woman. So here he's saying any taste, any tucha artha tarshanam, any taste, any attraction, any thirst, taste, greed, raga, for material activities, one should reject when he compares to Vrindavan, Bhajan, and to the, and this other translation says that you'll fulfill all your desires. Worship Vrindavan because Vrindavan fulfills all desires. It says, Vrindaranyam samastartam. All your artha, all your objectives, sama artha, all your objectives can be fulfilled by Vrindavan. Varshanam Ramaharshanam. This is very nice also, reminding that Vrindavan, when one is living in Vrindavan consciousness, Vrindavan means Vrindavan consciousness. Jiva Goswami explains in the Panchanga Bhakti that one should live in Mathura Mandala. Rupa Goswami says, but living in Vrindavan or Mathura Mandala means living in Vrindavan and Vrindavan consciousness. It means following a resident of Vrindavan, an Anuragi Vaishnava, and remembering their pastimes, remembering Radha Krishna's pastimes and the services they render. This is actually Vrindavan consciousness, which one may exist in anywhere. So if one exists in Vrindavan consciousness, then that will shower the fulfillment of all desires. Samasta artam. Vrindaranyam samasta artam. That what we really want is unlimited happiness and pure love. So living in Vrindavan consciousness, in Vrindavan, will quickly bring that. Because whether one, like Prabhupada explains, when you're doing, you can do service with the external body and senses, or with the internal subtle body, manasi seva, and they're equally appreciated by the Lord and equally accepted by the Lord. Because for the Lord, there's no difference. Service is service, mental service, physical service. So the same way, if one lives in Vrindavan consciousness, that means that his consciousness is in Vrindavan. His consciousness is in the Dham. So when you're living in Vrindavan Dham, this Bala Vrindavan in front of us, Prakat, Aprakat Dham, now, then we have the potency of Vrindavan Dham behind us, just living here. But if one establishes the Dham in his mentality, and that's why there's so many meditations on Vrindavan, there's guided meditations on Vrindavan Dham, how to meditate. When one establishes Vrindavan in his consciousness and starts living and thinking and desiring and meditating on the Nitya Vrindavan, Aprakrit Vrindavan, then he gets the same benefit of living here because the Dham is not limited. The Dham can be in your mind, the Dham can be in your heart. That bhajan is also there. Mama mana mandire, rahanashitini. Mama mana mandire. The mandir is, okay, the mandir is there. You can render service to Radha Krishna, the mandir. Shri mandir. We can also render service to the mandir of the heart and shrine Radha Krishna in the heart. So you can live in Vrindavan, the holy Dham, and visit the Leela Stalis. And they're full of Leela Shakti and the Dham Shakti. All the Krishna Shaktis are here. And you'll get so much benefit and promotion by living here. But if you live elsewhere, under Vrindavan consciousness, then the effect of the holy Dham will also emanate and radiate within your consciousness because you're living there. You're living in Vrindavan. So Vrindavan consciousness is the kingdom. Because many people, they live in Vrindavan, they're getting benefit just by living in Vrindavan. They're getting sukriti, they're getting purified. And imperceptibly, they're making lots of advancement. Because the Dham is like that. There's so many verses that say someone just lives here and moves here, he gets bhakti can come, bhakti avas can come inside his heart just by living here offenselessly. So we'll read some other verses on the same point. Verse 64 of the same chapter. Vrindavanam sakala Bhagavatam Varishter Lavayam Sorab Yanila Pavita Sarasavyam Globyam Parishramayo Rapi Sarvabhava Shobyam Prashanta Riena Sadavasantu. This abode of Vrindavan is attained only by the most fortunate souls. By its fragrant air, Sri Vrindavan purifies all its inhabitants. Even Lord Narayan and Lakshmi are eager to attain Vrindavan. Therefore, you should reside here with a peaceful, unagitated heart. When devotees walk in Vrindavan, I don't remember. I mean, I remember Vrindavan itself and Prikamarg. Now it may be different. But in Govardhan Prikamarg, when you walk there in certain seasons when the different trees are blossoming, the flame, there's one tree called the flame flower, red, very bright red flower. I think it's Java, I'm not sure. Called flame flower in English. There's certain trees, they blossom with big red flowers, and so many flowering trees are there on Govardhan Prikamarg. When you walk around Govindakund in that area, and even before, sometimes you get these wonderful fragrances come from the Govardhan Hill. And you don't know because it's so overpowering and so captivating that your mind is, you're imagining that, oh, is this the fragrance of the leela that's going on? Or you're hankering or imagining, visualizing. Is this fragrance, is such an extraordinary celestial fragrance, is this coming from Govardhan itself? Is this by chance coming from the caves of Govardhan, the Kandara, Giri Kandara? The Giri Kandara, is this fragrance coming from the caves of Vrindavan, perhaps? By chance, Radha and Krishna's pastimes are going on there. Their confidential pastimes in the caves of Govardhan. And this fragrance is coming to inspire me and attract me and purify me. Or then you look around, you're trying to trace out the fragrance, and your nose is searching madly for the source of that fragrance. And then you see, oh, there's this tree, some distance in the future, of big red flowers. Then you go closer to the tree, and the fragrance becomes more concentrated. Then you think, oh, it must be the tree emanating this fragrance. At least that's probably the fact. But the point is that Vrindavan is like that, that it's just the air of Vrindavan purifies all its inhabitants. Because Krishna says in the Gita, he says, Pavana, says, Pavana Smi, he says that among purifiers I am the wind. There's a phrase like that in the Vibhuti Yoga section. He says, among purifiers I am the wind. We know that when we wash clothes and water and hang them on the line to dry, then the blowing of the air and the sunshine purify the cloth. So the blowing of air, the elements are actually purifying. We mentioned about Dravya Dosh the other day, or Samagri Dosh, where elements, items that are used in puja sometimes become contaminated. So then there's different means of purification. All the means of purification are basically contacting the pure form of some element, either water, which is purifying, or air, which is purifying, or earth, which is purifying, or fire. Some things are purified by fire, like gold. Gold is purified by fire. They keep heating and heating and melting it, and all the impurities and trace metals and whatnot that give it a dull look, gold, will come out when they melt it. And some things are purified by earth, like a conch shell becomes. Conch shell drops from your hand and gets covered with stool or something. It's not enough to wash it in water. You're supposed to bury it in the earth. Bury the conch shell in the earth for 5 days or something. Hari Bhakti Vilas talks about these points. And cloth is, wool is purified by air. If you have a wool blanket, you can just hang it in the sunshine and the air and it gets purified. Cotton is purified by water. So the air itself, according to Gita, is a source of purification. But here it says the Sarabhyanima Pavita Sarasabhyam. That the air of Vrindavan purifies all its inhabitants. Because the air of Vrindavan is carrying what? Air carries sound. And the air of Vrindavan is carrying the sound of Radharani's name, and carrying the fragrance of Krishna's pastimes, and carrying the whole vibration is in the air. The air is full of vibration. You hear sometimes there's rumbling of clouds, because the air is carrying the vibration of that rumble. So the air is carrying the vibration of Krishna's love, which is emanating from Leela Stalis. That's why it's said that Vrindavan, the air is different, the earth is different. We say it's Chintamani. So if the land is different, the element of land, Chintamani, Bhumi, is different than ordinary earth or soil in the material world, which it is. That means the air is also different than the material air. The fire is different. The water is different. The
the water is considered the Amrit, Charanamrita. But the water in an ordinary river or lake is not Charanamrita. So everything here is very extraordinary.
There's another translation. You can see this verse.
Well, you got that shluk from Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, where is that?
Pavana Pavatam Asmi, 10.31.
Oh, Pavana?
Pavatam Asmi.
Among purifiers,
I'm the wind. Rama Shastra Britam Aham Shastra.
Yeah, among wielders of weapons.
Makaras Chasmi.
Among wielders of weapons, I am Ram. Among fishes, I am the shark.
Yes, of flowing rivers, I'm the Ganges.
Of flowing rivers, I'm the Ganges.
10.31.
So this is text 50. Oh, friend.
64.
Okay. With a completely peaceful heart, one should always reside in Vrindavan, which is attained by the most fortunate souls, which is pleasant with fragrant breezes, and which Lord Narayan and Goddess Lakshmi yearn to enter. So, most Vaishnavas are aspiring to go to Vaikuntha. This is the paradox of Vrindavan, the irony of the whole thing, that all Vaishnavas, they're aiming at Vaikuntha, either at Yogya Dham, which is Vaikuntha, or Vishnu Loka, Narayan Loka. But we find here that Lakshmi and Narayan are hankering to come to Vrindavan, hankering into Vrindavan. This is fun. So he's telling us we should live here with a peaceful, it says here, a peaceful, unagitated mind. And here he says, with a completely peaceful heart. And why wouldn't one be peaceful? Why wouldn't one be peaceful, having attained the holy land of Vrindavan? As we hear, lakhs and lakhs of births, even the greatest sages and monies, that cannot attain residence in this terrestrial Vrindavan. Somehow or other, by the mercy of Gauranga and the will and mercy of Nityananda, even the most unqualified, most unfortunate souls have received the great fortune of residing in Vrindavan. It's incalculable. You talk about Audharya, Audharya Mahaprabhu, the magnanimity. Oftentimes we take Vrindavan for granted, and that's dangerous. Because Vrindavan can embrace and Vrindavan can bite. So if you treat Vrindavan nicely, then she'll embrace you lovingly. But if you treat Vrindavan wrongly, then Vrindavan will bite you. Like our Das Goswami, in the intense separation from Rupa Goswami, he was seeing, what is the point of living anymore? My Rupa is gone, my Sanatana is gone, and this Radhakun, to me, it seems like it's coming to bite me. This Vrindavan is coming to devour me. Well, those verses are there, I think, in maybe Vilakha Samadhi. He's saying, what is the use of living in this Vrindavan? This Govardhan is coming to bite me. Govardhan, this Vrindavan, part of Vrindavan, is coming to bite me. This Vrindavan appears like a python, a huge snake waiting to devour me. And this Radhakun and Shamakun appear like the gaping mouth of a tiger waiting to swallow me up. I'm so much suffering this fire separation from my Rupa Raghunath, from my Rupa Sanatana. So Vrindavan, in this case, from the high end of pure devotion, one may even see Vrindavan coming to bite them, to devour them in separation from Radha Krishna. One more verse, I think we're out of time. 74. Verse 74. So many unlimited ways to look at Vrindavan. This is the amazing viewpoint of Prabhupada Saraswati, that he can look at this one aspect of Krishna, this one worshipable aspect of Krishna, Vrindavan, Dham, and find so many nectarian glories and so many ways of us understanding Vrindavan, so many ways of looking at Vrindavan, appreciating Vrindavan. The entire book, it's only like 3,000 shlokas. Text 74,
Shataka 12. Sri Shadhyer Abhyasya Sadrasa Nidir Ashapi Nasadhyate Nashamapyava Sayayanti Nigamas Trasat Sadodasate Vasa Yasya Tirohitash Chidachid Atmar Kendu One Yadayo Vasaya Muna Matim Dadatu Kripaya Tan Medya Vrindavanam. May Sri Vrindavan, whose ocean of ecstasy cannot be attained by even personalities like Lakshmi Narayan, whose glories the reverential Vedas underestimate and therefore become disappointed, whose effulgence outshines the effulgence of the mundane sun, moon, and fire. O Vrindavan, mercifully give me permission to reside. Mercifully give me permission to reside in your land. He's praying, may Vrindavan give me the mercy to reside in its land, or may Vrindavan give me the mercy to reside here. And this is another translation of the same, text 74. I pray that Vrindavan forest, which is an ocean of transcendental nectar, even Lord Narayan and Srimati Lakshmi Devi cannot hope to attain, which the reverential Vedas cannot understand, and the transcendental splendor of which eclipses all spiritual material suns and fires, may become merciful and permit me to live within its boundaries. So this is an interesting prayer of someone who's living in Vrindavan. And he's writing this prayer while living in Vrindavan besides the Yamuna and Kaliyadaha, his bhajan stali, Prabodhananda Saraswati. But he's not feeling that I'm there. I'm not there. I'm not really at the precincts of Vrindavan. Am I here? Am I here? I have to pinch myself. Am I here? Am I in Bombay? Sometimes we wake up and we don't, and we may think we wake up and we had some dream, or we went somewhere a long way in our dreamland. We wake up, we think we're in our homeland, we think we're in Delhi or Bombay or New Zealand. Oh, I feel I'm home. Wait a minute. No, it's Radhakund, it's Vrindavan, I'm still here. Oh, I'm in the Holy Dham. Sometimes there's time shifts like this in a person's, when they're coming from unconscious to conscious. They feel disoriented, especially if you travel a lot. I remember when I was traveling much in America, I wouldn't remember, go from temple to temple, stay here and stay there, and you get up and you start to walk, oh, the bathroom's there. Where am I? Where's the bathroom? There's no bathroom. You know, you get disoriented where exactly you are. So, Kabbalah Saraswati, he's praying, he's saying, please, mercifully give me permission to reside here. Vas anayamatim dadatu kripaya. O Vrindavan, please give me your mercy, dadatu kripa, kripa dadatu. Please be merciful to me. Let me live in your boundaries. 1 second of our life is not for granted. We cannot take for granted 1 second of our life. Any second could be our last. So the mood of petition and begging and humility should be a moment-to-moment feeling for a devotee. Should always be in a mode of humility and gratitude and begging for the mercy of any superior personality or entity around him. If he's surrounded by Vaishnavas, he's praying humbly and sincerely and with great gratitude, begging for their mercy. Oh, please bless me. And you go to meet sadhus, sometimes people have questions for the sadhus. But the real question is simply a petition. Please bless me. Please give me mercy. You're greater than I am. You're better than I am. I'm destitute. I'm fallen. Because generally we go and approach sadhus, and we may think that we're somewhat similar, or we have some questions, and they can clear our questions, and of course they can. And they usually do when they try to.
But moreover, the essential thing we need from every corner is mercy. So Prabhupada Saraswati, he's begging, and both these translations confirm the same point that he's begging. I pray to that Vrindavan forest may become merciful and permit me to live within its boundaries. But what does this mean? It's like, in one sense, it doesn't make sense. So wait a minute, you're living here. And someone says, Prabhupada Saraswati, you're writing this shloka, you're praying to Vrindavan to live within its boundaries. Where are you living? Well, that means many things. One thing is, yes, I'm in this terrestrial Vrindavan, but I'm praying, Vrindavan, you have the power to send me to the Nitya Vrindavan. You have the power to send me to the Prakriti Vrindavan. That's also another way to look at it. Oh, I'm here doing bhajan in Vrindavan by my good fortune, by Guru Kripa, by Bhagavan Kripa, Radharani Kripa. But I want to perfect my stay, my vas, my brajavas, I want to perfect it. And the perfection of my brajavas here and this Bhava Vrindavan, Aprakat Dham now, the Lord, perfection of this is that you'll be merciful to me, Vrindavan. Vrindavan, be merciful and place me within the precincts, within the boundaries of that Nitya Vrindavan. That here in this Vrindavan I may perfect my bhajan and practice meditating on Siddhadeya and come to Bhava and Sarup city, is called Sarup city. But then ultimately we have to leave at the level of prema. We leave this body and we have to go to that Vrindavan, take birth there in Loma Gopi. So he's praying. It's no guarantee I'll attain that perfection. I'm living in Vrindavan, but I'm praying to you. Please, Vrindavan, be merciful. Give me permission to reside in your land eternally. So there's this Vrindavan that we're doing bhajan in as sadhakas, and there's a Vrindavan we live in eternally as siddhas in our vastu deha, fully developed, fully enriched with all spiritual bhavas and rasas, and our final spiritual position, Vastu City. Siddhadeya, Siddhasarup and Vastu City. Siddhadeya is cultivation, and Ragmar, even from the level of anarthanivrti, if one has greed, intense greed, and then one comes to Bhava, and Krishna arranges to manifest that desired, meditated on form. And that becomes your Sarup city. That's your Sarup. Rupa Goswami described as Siddha Sarup. So Siddha Sarup is there. But then, to enter the Vrindavan, to live within the boundaries, to have that, get the mercy of Vrindavan, that's the ultimate dispension of mercy from Vrindavan. That this Vrindavan catapults us and promotes us to that Vrindavan. The Prakat Leela, the Lord, in some universe, Bhava Vrindavan, take birth from a womb of Gopi, and grow up there and develop Purvarag and all the different bhavas by associating with the Nitya Siddhas and training and learning from them. What are their moves of love, how they express their love. So it's a great, Rupa Goswami says, it's a great fortune to live here and practice bhakti in Vrindavan. And the perfection of living in Vrindavan is that one attains Vrindavan. The perfection of living in Vrindavan, doing bhajan, is that one attains Vrindavan. To live eternally in Vrindavan, worshipping Radha and Krishna. So therefore he's praying to this Vrindavan intensely, oh Vrindavan, please be merciful to me. May I live in your land eternally. Because we don't know, even we want to pray, like the Vrijvasis, they pray. Very interesting how they pray. The Vrijvasis living in this Vrindavan, many of them. They pray, I don't know about Goloka Vrindavan, I know about this Vrindavan. I want to take birth in this Vrindavan. As we told you, it's the custom amongst many, I don't know who exactly, but I was told that many people in Vrindavan, the real Vrijvasis that love Vrindavan and have this particular mood, but it is often done Brijvasis, they don't burn themselves on wood, because wood would naturally come from trees that were cut down in Vrindavan. When we first came to Vrindavan in 77, for Yatra, and even later when we moved here, we were told that there was a law in Mathura Mandala, it's against the law to cut any tree in Vrindavan. And no one's allowed to cut any tree. And if someone's cutting some tree, you can report to the DM, and they will come and stop that. And all these trees are part of Krishna's Leela, and no one is allowed to cut any tree unless there's some prior permission. We're told that this is a law. Then they cited so many stories that someone cut this tree and the family died, or many things like this are told to signify the speciality of the trees. But we actually told it was a law at Braj Mandala. We thought, oh, this is so wonderful. And I remember that this was a consciousness. Anyone lived here, they wouldn't think of cutting any trees now, but now it's obviously that idea is not even in the atmosphere. But what was I saying?
When they die, they are not kept burned on wood because they don't want to cut trees.
Excuse me?
They are not burned on wood because they don't
want
to cut trees.
When the Vrijvasis are leaving, they're not burned on wood. Generally, people are shamsan. Cremation are burned on wood. They burn on cow dung. Thousands, hundreds, whatever it takes, hundreds of them. Cow dung. And then on the funeral pyre, when the body is lying, according, I've told this before, they're lying facing up, looking upwards, towards Swarga or wherever. This is the yama, the rule, niyam. But in Braj, they're facing down. They lie down. They say, I don't want to look up there. I want to keep my eyes in Braj. I'll keep my eyes in Braj. And I don't want to be burned with this cow dung and the dust of my body and the dust of the ashes of the cow dung and the ashes of my body will be sprinkled all over this Vrajadam. This is my sankalpa. Live in Vrindavan, die in Vrindavan, be in Vrindavan, life after life. But there's no guarantee. So that's why prayer is so much important, to increase one's attachment and to hopefully get the mercy of Vrindavan. Krishna's Leela Shakti. Some people lived in Vrindavan or Mathura in their last life. On this life, they were born in America or New Zealand or Russia or anywhere. It can be like that. You can go anywhere in the universe. The Earth planet is a transit lounge. They say that the London airport is the biggest airport in the world because it transits people coming and going from all different corners. London Airport is supposed to be. So the Earth planet is a transit lounge where jivas can get scattered anywhere in the universe, up to Swarga, down to Pataloka. They can go to Svetadvipa, the spiritual planet in the material world, Kiradaksha Vishnu's planet. They can go anywhere. So therefore, praying to Vrindavan, always praying to Vrindavan, worshipping Vrindavan. Being very conscientious about living in Vrindavan. Like, we generate trash, we are a trash generating entity. Bags and whatnot, so we should try to be responsibly take care of our trash. You're responsible for your trash in Vrindavan. So therefore, the conscientious devotee, he burns all of his trash into ashes and scatters the ashes in the ground. It's a type of fertilizer also. He doesn't, and then he tries to recycle everything. These people come around, fortunately in Vrindavan, people come around, pick up plastic and glass and practically anything and give you some peanuts in exchange. Peanuts or bitter fruit or guavas or bananas, whatever's in season. And you give them some old broken fan and they give you a kilo of peanuts. So that's a good deal. Have you ever seen? So this is in Vrindavan. If we treat Vrindavan like you would treat Krishna, then you just see how your behavior will change. If you have a deity of Krishna, would you empty your trash can on top of the deity? I doubt it. If you did, it would probably be the last time you ever did that. You'd probably get a reaction. So the this is a point about the Vrindavan. We worship. If there's no difference, na rup gun lila parishishta. There's no difference. They're all worship Radhya. Krishna Nam, his form, his qualities, his holy Dham, his parishishta, his associates, they're all worshipable. So Vrindavan, we offer arti to Vrindavan. You see then Vrindavan in the evening time, they offer arti to Yamuna, Akeshagat. It's a famous arti, a big long ghee. He sticks and he sticks, ghee sticks. Big arti. It's one of the sights to see. Sunset arti for Yamuna Akeshagat, you see? And they're worshipping Yamuna. Speak of Vrindavan. So we're living in a worshipable place. We're living in Krishna's abode. So how careful we have to be and respectful in all of our movements and dealings in this place. Shri Vrindavan Mahimamrita Ki Jai.
His Holiness Mandi Swami Maharaj.
Jai. Vancha Kavatri Vyascha Kripa Sindhaveva Chati Namah Vivya Vaishnava. Really marvelous book. I was reading that book till 12 o'clock last night. Good book.
You like it,
Matthew? Yeah, it's pretty good. It's really explain.